This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thanks again, Randy. Now here for your Ag News here on a Tuesday and continuing in yesterday's top story. Several Midwestern governors are joining the fight against small oil refinery request to the Environmental Protection Agency for retroactive gap year ethanol exemptions. The governors of South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, and Nebraska are urging EPA Chief Andrew Wheeler to drop 52 gap year waiver requests from oil refiners. The four are members of the governor's biofuels coalition, but not from states covered by a federal court that ruled against most waivers this year. Renewable Fuels Association Chief Executive Officer Jeff Cooper threatened recently to return to court if EPA grants any of the retroactive waivers, which he views as trying to end run the ruling.
The big question for us and the challenge for us is what about the other two-thirds of those small refineries that are outside of the Tenth Circuit? And so we would be appealing to other courts with jurisdiction over those refineries, you know, most likely the D.C. Circuit, if EPA was to make the mistake of granting these exemptions retroactively.
The Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals rejected waivers granted by EPA that were not simple extensions of prior waivers. The fight against oil refiners comes amid the COVID-19 pandemic that clobbered ethanol refiners and corn growers. National Farmers Union President Rob LaRue told the Senate Ag Committee recently, quote, "Small refinery exemption waivers is a really huge disservice not only to farmers and ranchers in rural communities, but to the nation, trying to look for alternative fuels and a very climate-friendly solution." A bipartisan group of 16 senators also called on the EPA last week to reject the gap waiver petition outright. The governors wrote Wheeler saying, quote, "The misuse of small refinery waivers under the RFS caused a significant number of plants to partially or fully shut down, resulting in, quote, job losses, decreased in commodity purchase and prices, as well as shortages of co-products." And in the latest news on the dicamba front, late last week, a panel of judges in the Ninth Circuit Court said no to a BASF motion to stay and recall their June 3rd ruling that vacated three dicamba registrations. The move now puts dicamba registrations and product users back where they started from a month ago, with three or four of the top dicamba herbicides no longer federally approved for use. Now farmers and applicators can still apply any existing stocks that were in their possession as of June 3rd, according to the cancellation order issued by the EPA agency back on June 8th. They have to follow directions on the former labels, as well as any state rules that are already taking effect, including state cutoff dates that may have already taken place. Here in Illinois, that date is today. But with the hotter temperatures and rain in the forecast, many, if not any, dicamba has been applicated in the last 5 days. Looking past 2020 and into the future, a DTN article says the future of the three dicamba registrations is now in limbo. BASF had asked the judges to recall their mandate based on several reasons. For example, BASF says it wasn't made aware of that its Ingenia herbicide was at stake in the case before the June 3rd decision. That meant they didn't get a proper opportunity to defend their product in court. And it seems like we tell you about a new cancellation from COVID-19 every day. Another casualty to the virus. The Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days have been going strong for 65 years now as a place that farmers can go to find out about new products and tools to boost productivity. But for the first time ever, those shows will not be happening. Farm Progress made the difficult decision to cancel both shows due to the rapidly changing conditions related to COVID-19. Show management had initially said the shows would go on with different health and safety requirements in place. State and local officials in Iowa had come out in support of the show taking place, but Farm Progress officials said it became apparent in a very short time that the situation across the country is changing. Quote, "We have been working with officials in Iowa and Nebraska for our shows, and we appreciate the support they expressed for us to hold the events," says Senior Vice President Don Torte. Quote, "They are a critical partner to us, and we are all disappointed to not be able to host the event this year, but feel confident that this is the right decision for our community." And show manager Matt Youngman says that a virtual experience is still being planned for the Farm Progress Show, which is organized this year for September 1st through the 3rd.
It certainly has changed a lot. And 2 weeks ago, we were really confident in the way the curves were looking and in our plans to have a safe event. But With what we've seen for an outbreak in Texas, Florida, and Arizona, and some concerns expressed to us by exhibitors and volunteers and internal staff and lots of different folks, we've made the decision to cancel the in-person events for Farm Progress Show this year and move to virtual, and then look forward to in-person return of in-person events in 2021 with the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. We really did everything we could to have an in-person event this year, and we got great support from the state of Iowa and the state of Nebraska. It just wasn't the right thing to do in the end. You know, we fought hard and put on a brave face and showed our cards, and when everyone else showed their cards, it just wasn't meant to be for this year. But, you know, my mission here as the show director is to facilitate conversations between farmers like me and exhibitors like we have at our shows. And so we're going to try to create the best virtual experience for that we can possibly have. But we're going to be learning, so if anybody's got any comments, our door is always open for commentary. So we look forward to hearing about how we did and how we can do it better going forward. I think it's something that's going to become part of my job responsibilities going forward once if we can get this right.
Ann Youngman, who is a farmer in Western Illinois, is also the manager of Husker Harvest Days, and that event was scheduled for September 15th through the 17th in Nebraska. That's also been canceled, but next year's dates for the Farm Progress Show are August 31st, September 1st, and September 2nd of 2021. In some other national ag news, workers in the meatpacking industry have been on the front line during the COVID-19 outbreak, and many of those workers are members of the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union. UFCW President Mark Perrone says COVID-19 is still going strong and hitting their union members, as well as non-union workers, very hard.
Contrary to some of what employers and I think even some of our government leaders want us to believe, COVID-19 still is very real. And what we're seeing is overall increases in cases again. The last time we did this call, we mentioned how some union and non-union employers had done away with hazard pay, or you can call it heroes pay in some cases, companies like Amazon, Walmart, and Kroger. Even though that we're over 100 days into this pandemic, the fact is COVID-19 and its crisis that it's created hadn't passed.
Perrone talks about the impact of COVID-19 on the workers in his union.
Based on the information that we have, over 196 of our members in food retail, meat packing and food processing, and healthcare have died. A total of 238 of our members across all the industries that we represent have died. Over 29,000 of our members in food retail, healthcare, meat packing, and food processing have been impacted or exposed to COVID-19. And over the last month, over 2,300 of our members have been impacted or exposed.
He talks about initiatives the union will be pursuing to get their workers paid and protected while they are on the front line of COVID-19.
First of all, we're going to be calling for every retail, food operation, meat packing and healthcare, non-union and union, essential workers to immediately, as a minimum, to be paid $15 an hour. And we also want the reinstatement of all hazard pay or hero pay in all states where cases are rising, and to directly connect hazard pay to those number of cases. Secondly, we're going to be calling for every state, county, government to mandate the wearing of masks in public places to compel employers and companies to enforce the use of masks.
Again, that was Mark Perrone, the president of the United Commercial Food Workers Union. And one business here locally that is union with the UFCW is the local Capri IGA stores in Hillsboro and Greenville. In other meatpacking and livestock news, hot dogs might be a 4th of July staple with the national holiday coming up this weekend on Saturday, but there are many more sausage options for the grill. National Pork Board Innovation Manager Jim Murray says the demand for sausage is growing across the nation, and Murray credits the unique flavor profile.
Probably the most popular would be profiles that are sweet. So you see things like sweet and spicy barbecue. You'll see honey mustard. You'll see cranberry. You'll see apple sauerkraut. And then people are also loving spicy. So maybe it's a jalapeno cheddar, or it's a particular type of chili, like a hatch green chili. Maybe it's buffalo or Cajun or a gyro style of sausage. All of those can be made into a flavor system and also could utilize what in the industry they would call inclusions or particulates to have garnish in there, so to speak. So you can have chunks of cheese in there. You can have chunks of chili or spices or herbs. And the last one, once again, would be cheesy. Maybe it's mac and cheese sausage or mushroom Swiss or even a Reuben style.
Murray also is a grilling guru and likes a two-stage approach to cooking sausage.
If it's a fresh sausage, I'm going to simmer that sausage in a flavorful liquid. That could be broth, it could be beer, it could be buttermilk, wine. And then I'm going to put some aromatics in there, meaning is it onion, is it sauerkraut, is it some herbs? And I'm just going to simmer it. I'm not going to boil it, so just a light bubble in the liquid itself until I get that center of that sausage about 160 degrees. Then I'm going to take it over to my grill and just finish it on the grill by browning it properly. And I'm a big fan of grill baskets for sausages, because you can put about 12 sausages in there, and it gives you complete control. If you have a flare-up for whatever reason, you're not rapidly trying to get them all off the grill before everything starts on a bonfire. So it allows you to pull them on and off and turn them as needed.
Once the fresh sausage reaches a level of 165 degrees, it's ready to go. Once the internal temperature of the sausage has reached that level, you can return the sausage to the simmering liquid until you're ready to serve. Moving on now into your latest Illinois ag news. The soybean crop in southern parts of the state has been under some stress, and that's allowed spider mites to make an unexpected appearance, according to U of I Extension entomologist Nick Siter.
So spider mites perform very well on stressed out plants. Usually that's drought stress. When you get into this situation early, it could be a combination of stresses, drought, the cold temperatures that we had early, stunting plants, getting dinged by herbicides, all of these things can contribute, but drought tends to be the big driver.
Farmers should be looking for a yellowish to brown leaf tissue. It may be stippled, meaning the soybean leaf will have a light and dark spots, and it might include some webbing the spider mites may leave behind. The rescue treatment threshold isn't particularly well defined, according to Siter.
We talk about something like 10 to 25% discolored. But it's a judgment call, really, and what you're judging it on is how stressed out those plants are over how large an area and how soon that stress is going to be relieved.
Rainfall and better growing conditions are among the stress relievers. And in other Illinois ag news, the USDA Rural Development is continuing to promote infrastructure programs for local communities.
Well, the infrastructure and the basic work of rural development has continued, and so we've been working with a lot of communities, water co-ops and others, to help develop and repair aging facilities in the process. And here, just about a week and a half ago, we announced $23 million we were investing in projects in seven different communities, and this was to improve water or wastewater infrastructure in the process. One of the things that's made it attractive, and I want to encourage local communities to listen to this, I know everyone looks for grant money, and there is grant available, but our loan rates are the lowest they've ever been in the history of rural development. We were offering 1.7, 1.8% loan, interest loan on loans up to 30 to 40 years, and so that's about as close as you can get to, I'll call it free money, but by making these investments now in long-term investments for their community, you know, it's going to pay dividends to the people who live in those areas for years to come, and it's something that people don't want to ignore.
That was Doug Wilson, and he is the Illinois State Director for the USDA Rural Development. You can find out about the agency's many programs online at rd.usda.gov/IL. And that'll wrap up your Ag News here on your Tuesday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by email at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. And you can also find podcasts of the Farm Show on the website as well at WSMIRadio.com. So again, here for your Tuesday morning, the last day of June, June 30th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.